entertainment capital of the world, of Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Well, good morning, good evening, good today. Welcome to Midnight in the Marshaverse, where today meets tomorrow and is still today. Isn't that amazing? It's the witching hour where magic happens. And we like to get together once a week and just chill with friends, talk smack, maybe do a little history, learn something about each other, have some fun, no pressure. I created the Marshaverse because I don't like the rules in the other verse. They had all their rules are wrong. You know, it's everything is made up, and it's made up to benefit some people and not others. So here in the Marshaverse, my rules rule. And so we have here where men rule in the larger universe, in the Marshaverse, women rule. This woman rules. In the Marshaverse, we don't have any restrictions against anything that benefits women. We understand that we worship the natural mother creator who created us all. We turn this system upside down here. And I realized that I created this Marshaverse years and years and years ago. I think everybody who spends time alone, who likes their own company, creates their own world where everybody agrees with you, where you're right about everything, and you don't have any problem convincing people to see things your way. And those of us who had, I like to say in my act, I was a pretty normal abused child. Most of us who have had those kind of similar why is the world picking on me feelings have found refuge in our own imaginations, in our own company. And so I'm letting you in mine. If you want to come on in, relax, forget about everybody else's pressure and all that kind of stuff. This is the place where things work and we can chill. And we usually start the show with some cannabis and cognac because that's what I like. And so those kind of adult libations help get us in a relaxed kind of chill mode. This week, we are having something a little different. Cognac is a brandy. It's a brandy from a specific region in France, from the Cognac region. Those are made and manufactured from grapes from the Cognac area of France, are the only ones who can call themselves Cognac. But there are other brandies. And there's Calvados, there's Armagnac, there's, in this country, America's original brandy is an Applejack. Apple brandy is what fueled the Sons of Liberty to dress up like Indians and go throw tea in the harbor because they didn't want a tax on their booze. And so we're going to have some apple brandy. It's called Laird's, and it's straight apple brandy, and it's 100 proof. And we're just going to have it straight. I was going to do a little more, something fancy. But Stephen, my son, and I, we went to a Kamala Harris strategy meeting, and things got backed up, and so we were running a little late and didn't have time to prepare for all of that. So we just have a little Applejack over ice. We also have this AirPro vape, and it's I like the vape, but I don't like the ones that taste like candy, that taste like fruit. It seems it feels like this is made for kids. It's like the soda pop wines they came out when I was coming up. They even had one called Orange Rock. It was an orange carbonated wine. It was obviously marketed for kids, but it was pretty nasty. And then Boone's Farm and those others that were for younger tastes and pocketbooks. I don't like those. I'm too old for that. I want regular weed that tastes like weed. And so I don't usually get these. However, I wanted to try it for tonight, and maybe it would complement the Applejack. It's called Black Mamba. I like that too, that Kobe reference. And it's blueberries and currant or something. Anyway, it gets the job done. So join me if you will. Okay. I like to vape because I can hit it once, forget it, I'm good. And I can have a little Applejack. Let's see how that's going. It's not bad. Okay, so let's get it started. And here, you know, I make a playlist for every one of these shows. You can find it in the comments when you like, comment, share, and subscribe, and come back again, tell your friends, all that kind of stuff. And it's a playlist of auntie music, because among other things, I am that auntie, the one that your mama don't invite over often because she's a bad influence, that the one you love. I'm that auntie. And so I make these playlists that kind of encompass all kinds of time periods, because I've been fascinated with the concept of the Chitlin circuit. Not just for itself, but its place in a larger network of Black innovation and resistance. From the time we got here on this soil, we rebelled. And we rebelled constantly. And we found ways to exist in systems that weren't designed to include us. And we learn about them in segments. We learn, and then in 1716, we did this, and then we did that. And they give them names. They give them Reconstruction. They give them the Jim Crow period. You get this period and that. And so we don't get a sense of the overall continuum of the Black experience that existed in addition or in conjunction with the mainstream, which in most instances translates to white. So while white society had designed its systems to benefit them and oppress us, Black people found ways to develop a culture that benefited us and, in a real sense, changed the country. And we hear about it most often through our music, through our arts and that kind of culture. But I happened to catch a Henry Louis Gates show, I can't think of the name of it now, where he was talking about all the Black networks that we put together. And I say we because I'm Black, not because I had anything to do with it. I did not. But from the earliest times, like-minded Black people founded networks that benefited them and everybody else, from medicine, from academia, farming, every aspect of society. And so there's been this subculture that's not really been often looked at as a whole. And we think that Black music is segmented, like it's all Black music. All the music, it's all Black music. The from the whatever they were dancing to off the boat to blues, to jazz, to soul, gospel. These are all just the same music about different subjects by different people who put their own spin on it. And when other people copied it and absorbed it, then they developed their own. I'll give you an example before I move on. Elvis Presley is known to be Elvis Presley. And supposedly he influenced a whole generation of people with his music. But Elvis was pretty much coached by a lot of Black people. He was, there was Chuck Jackson, I believe, was an influence. There was Otis Blackwell, who wrote, not only wrote some of his songs, but told him how to sing them. He was very much influenced by Black singers and the music that they had created. And so he copied it a lot. And then they called that a whole different kind of music. That's rock and roll. It's just him doing Black music. And so if we think about the accomplishments and what it took to for people who weren't allowed to make movies, people who weren't allowed to be in minstrel shows unless they, you know, Blacked up too. But how they subverted that system and created something that was positive and led to other forms of representation and expression. And it's all one history of a people that we have to appreciate, because we might be able to lose this whole attitude we say we have sometimes, where everything is, what's wrong with Black people? What's wrong with the Black community? The Negro problem and this, that, and the other. Ain't nothing wrong with us. Our agenda has been the same since 1619. Stop fucking with us. That's all anybody has. Just stop fucking with us. And America keeps saying no. We're going to keep fucking with you. And so if we look at ourselves now with the understanding that people been fucking with us since 1619, and you look at what all we have accomplished, you can't help but be proud. You can't help but feel good. You can't help but share that with other people. You have nothing to buck up on them. You know what your people have done, what you can do, and you can imagine where we're going to go. And so I'm all about the celebration. I'm all about the, look at y'all. Y'all better go ahead and let's keep on keeping on. Vote. If you vote, we win. If you vote for the obvious choice, we win. It's not even debatable. There's nothing to think about. If we vote, we win, because we got it like that. We are those people. We can do that. So celebrate. And when you want to hear the music, that auntie who always, kind of hyped you up and told you you could when other people told you you couldn't, and let you sneak a little sip out of her drink. It made you feel grown, but was the first one with the big, big present when you graduated, when you got that job, when you got married, when you needed something to celebrate. That's what you can find here. Ain't nothing but love. Ain't no, we ain't got no beefs here, no conflict. We got good friends, and we got a special guest tonight who is a friend from when I first started getting back into stand-up, and I'm excited to chop it up with her, Alicia Cooper. We're going to get to talk to her in a minute. But first, I think it's time that we had a word from our sponsor. Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings enhanced our Buck's Pumpkin Spice pick-me-ups in a can. Aunt Karen knows that being an anti-woke suburban soccer mom of the silent majority who wants to take her country back to a simpler time when black and white referred to the images on the TV and not the people who live next door. That can be exhausting. Between scouring every car, bus, delivery van for anti-white haters disguised as good-looking black men as you walk your precious little snookums out of the gun-free areas and through the metal detectors of their government-subsidized private preschool before hurrying back home to vacuum, dust, and tidy up the house in pearls and heels while keeping one eye on the homeschooled older kids' video game play and the other on the tramp across the streets, revolving door of wayward neighborhood husbands. Girl, you need a break. So Aunt Karen is introducing her corporate pushers farmer, Our Bucks Double Shot Speedball Espressos, Librium Lattes and Methadone Mochaccinos, and PCP Plus Pudding Pops in a can just for you. One sip of any of her Happy Housewives concoctions will give any suburban Susie the attitude and energy she needs to get through even the most trying day. And as an extra bonus, just between us girls, the black cans vibrate. So Aunt Karen, in association with Valley Doll Pharmaceutical, is the company that put the Barbie in the barbiturates and vice versa. All right. It's time. Anyway, I met this lady. We did a show. We did a bar show here in Vegas. We worked together on a cruise ship on the Tom Joyner cruise. That was fun. And she's going to tell you the story about how she wouldn't let me rent her house. I'm going to ask her about that. But she also, what else did we do? She also, I came to town and she called me up and said, girl, Chili's got $6 margarita. It was on. Won't you please welcome my friend, Alicia Cooper.
Hey, Archie. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you remember all those things?
I certainly did. And you did my podcast.
Okay.
When I first put it up, I think you were one of the first, either the first or the second guest. And that episode was so much fun. It was right when you were getting back into it.
Yeah, it was very early on. And yes. Before we start, what you drinking?
I am drinking some lemonade. I really need to spike it, though, but I'm drinking some Simply Lemonade.
Okay, well, whatever gets you through the night, it's all right with me. So, all that other stuff aside, let's talk about them $6 margaritas.
Oh, them $6 margaritas. Them things will get you in trouble because they actually got some liquor in it.
Yes.
But you know, sometimes they'll water you down.
The two of us ordered a pitcher, or we might have ordered two pitchers because you wanted one kind and I wanted another.
Right,
so
right.
We got these pictures, and we just kikiing and talking. Was it just the two of us at first?
At first it was, but then more people came in. Kim Whitley came in. Kim Whitley called
and said, what you doing? I said, we at Chili's drinking $6 margaritas. She said, they got $6 margaritas on the way. So her and Andre LaBelle.
Yeah.
Another lady, I can't remember her name. But anyway, they all came and they ordered pitchers of $6 margaritas. So now we got all these margaritas. We are kikiing. It's getting later and later. The waiters keep walking by and looking at us like, ain't y'all through? We like, can we get some more nachos? We ain't got no more nachos. Then we tried to order some more margaritas. Y'all drank all the margaritas. You drank all the margarita mix. You drank all the tequila. We don't have no more. Go home. And so we finally left. But that was an all-day affair.
Yeah.
I know you are doing all kind of stuff. You produce and write, make movies and do albums. You got about 400 albums. You got more albums than Red Fox and Moms Mabley put together. You do an album every damn week. You got 17 specials running all over everywhere. You must have people must have your picture in their house. When you got started doing stand-up like we all do, from where are you from?
I'm from DC.
What made you decide in the production side of the business?
Well, I always wanted to create sitcoms. And when I saw the two sitcoms that I really loved, Golden Girls and Living Single. You know, so after I saw Living Single, because I already fell in love with Golden Girls, and I thought that was so wonderful that no matter what you looked like, no matter where you were from, no matter how old you were, you could laugh at four old white women. That's how good the writing was. Yeah. And you could watch it again and again and laugh like you never saw it.
Right.
And so, you know, I was so impressed with the writing. Then Living Single did a similar thing where they had, you know, they had four girls, black girls, you know, that we could relate to, and the writing was excellent. And so that's what I wanted to do. So I fell backwards in the stand-up because I saw Def Jam. And see, you remember we were coming up, the only people you saw on TV were clean. Like you couldn't get onto, when you saw Marsha, Marsha was coming on there killing it clean. And then when you saw Def Jam, HBO, no language restrictions, we heard everything we hear at home on HBO. Yeah. And I was like, oh my goodness. And they were my age. And, you know, I was like, I can do that. I want to do that. And I've been told I'm funny, but I still didn't want it. I didn't think it was a career option. I just thought it was a, you know, a funny creative outlet. So I always kept my day job. So when I first started doing comedy, I kept the day job for the first 8 years, you know, so I would work 12-hour days in production and then I would go to the club at night, you know, but you can do that when you're younger. I couldn't do that now.
No, you can do that. I was never going to do that. I quit my job like 2 weeks after I got here. I was not. I'm not working. I am not that girl. So I figured that out. I am not corporate worker in any sense. And I am not an audience. Yeah. I don't like being in the audience. Mm-hmm. I like being a performer. So I don't ever really have to go on the red carpet through the front door. Let me in through the back. Let me go on, do my show, and disappear like magic. That's really I like to do it, but you like to do all the jobs, the producer, director, actors, comedian, whatever.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Know
I guess
I do. That gets you all the money on the back end, but in the beginning, that's a big investment.
Yeah, that is a big investment. But you know, as you know, you don't really start making money as a comic right away, you know, so. I mean, yeah. So I kept that job because I wasn't making any money. And you know, you're at the end of the line behind a whole bunch of people when you're first starting. Yeah. So it could take you 3 years before you start getting any kind of money worth talking about. So you
get
know,
good enough to earn some money. Who's gonna pay you when you first start out?
But yeah, so that's why I kept my job, just to, you know, just to make sure I could sort of like monkey bars over to the next thing.
And it's been working out for you. Tell me, give me your titles that you want people to know.
Actor, director, writer, producer, comedian.
Okay, that's your titles, the titles you produced, so they know what to watch.
Oh, okay. So the TV shows I produced, where I started out, woo, in college, I was working at BET doing the all the music television kind of shows. You know, the what was the one with Donnie Simpson? You know, all those kinds of shows. Yeah, right. Back then, that's what we did, the rap cities and all that. But then when I moved to LA, I started working on the first job I got 3 weeks after arriving here. I got a job on Magic Johnson's late night talk show. And to this day, I love me Magic. He just got a piece of our Washington Commanders, and we are winning this year. Okay. Ooh, we haven't won in a while. Magic is good luck. Magic is magic.
You know, I had a big, I wanted to climb Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson, just get to the top and sit there.
People still tell me that joke. He was a good sport about it, though.
Yeah. And see, that's why I love, like, the double entendre. You know, you can do all that on network TV. You know, and that was the creativity. Yeah.
But there, I have a story because there, Michael Jordan had an award show in Chicago, and Magic was there, and all of the basketball players were there, and it was a big deal. And since I'm from Chicago, I had my parents come, and they were just thrilled. And we're standing around talking, and all of a sudden I hear, Marshall Warfield! And everybody stopped, and I turn around, and this huge man is running toward me with his arms out. And he's running at me, and he grabs me and loses his footing. And we fall down, and he lands on top of me. I think I just lost the light. Anyway, he landed on top of me, and he was mortified. He's, oh, my goodness, I just love you so much. I don't know what to do. I'm so sorry. And he kept apologizing. I wasn't hurt, and I was really flattered that Dikembe Mutombo thought that much about me, that he would throw himself at me. And so since we lost him last week, it's triggered that memory that I could share.
Yeah, because he was almost 7 feet tall, right?
Yeah, that made it really special. He apologized to my parents. He apologized to the room. He apologized for his village. He apologized for all his ancestors. I just had to hug him and say, it's okay. It's okay, because that's very, very sweet. He was a very sweet man.
Awesome. Yeah. We're losing a lot of good people. We just lost Frankie Beverly.
Sissy Houston.
Yeah,
the list goes on. Yeah. But now we at that age where that's what we talk about. You know, who ain't here no more, and whether or not we had a bowel movement. That's always, you know.
And what hurts? How's our potassium?
Yeah, what hurts? What you got it, you know, having, how's your health? How's the family? You know, that kind of thing. Your special stand-up.
Yeah.
What? Tell us about those.
Well, I have like 5 or 6 albums on iTunes, and I have a special running on Tubi called Alicia Cooper for President that's running right now. And that was just coming up because everybody was complaining about nobody wanted Joe Biden, nobody wanted Donald Trump. So I said, well, shit, let me run. Okay. You know? You know, I'm like, we were little kids, and they were saying elementary school, what do you want to be? And we'd be like, the president! I was like, well, we can do this shit now. This is what they electing. We all got a shot. That.
I skipped president and went straight to goddess. You know, even if I miss and land on president, I did pretty good. But no, creator, mother. I really call myself that auntie. So, and I like being that auntie.
See, that's good. That's good. Yeah. That's good. So the specials, they were a lot of fun, and I still haven't had a chance to do the one I really want to do. You know, I want to do one where, you know, more towards Dick Gregory, Paul Mooney kind of POV. You know, I want to just say some stuff that, you know, needs to be said and might hurt some feelings.
Yeah, let out your inner militant.
Yeah. I want to say the stuff I say in my living room.
Yeah, we all have that. And I think it's fine, you know, and I also think not only is it fine, it's conversational. You know, this is not controversial. This is not something where we have to beg people to understand and all that kind of stuff and apologize. As women, as Black people, we're taught to apologize before we do anything wrong. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to bother you, buddy. Excuse me, but and we approach things that kind of way, and it's, you know, the narrative has to change.
Yeah.
And we have to change it because it's not the stories that are wrong, it's the POV from which they're told. And ain't nobody let us tell our story, and we ain't let that stop us. We've been telling it ever since. Forgotten movies, Nothing But a Man, and all of the other early films and filmmaking. Anyway, we've been doing that all along. And once we make our history comprehensive and understandable, it makes perfect sense. And then we can move on.
Then we can move on. And also, but I know you saw recently Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Kamala Harris isn't humble. Okay. That woman needs to be humble, especially in 2024.
Right.
And she said, she really is the handmaid's tale. Because I'm like, what in the world are you talking about?
You heard what Kamala said. She said, every woman don't want to be humble.
Okay. No, my kids keep me humble. She was just trying to work their kids dig in any way she could.
And childless women have time to change the world while you are changing diapers. So say thank you and send us some money and shut up.
And shut up. And I tell them all the time, it's not whether or not you have kids, it's how you treat kids.
You have kids?
J.D. Vance is, no, I do not. And J.D. Vance is the creepiest person I know. Like, I wouldn't even want him around my kids. He's just, everything about him is horrendous.
Slick as spit.
Yeah.
But did you make a decision, a conscious decision, not to have children?
I did. What happened was, I said, I grew up an only child, but what happened was, I said, unless I, and I'm not, this is not judging anybody else, this is my thing. I said, unless I get married, I'm not going to have anybody's kid. Okay. You know, but that was my thing. You know, because I'm not trying to do this by myself. And, you know, we're going to start this thing out right, because I know if you propose, at least you had a level of seriousness that preceded us moving forward after that. So I said, if I'm not married, I'm not having any kids. So that was my decision.
I decided not to have children because I didn't want grown people following me around talking about ma. I just didn't want that. Like, I'm trying to be out here in the street, and here comes this man talking about, ma, can I have $5? No, I never wanted that. I'm not responsible enough to be a good mother, who I hold in high esteem. Anyway, honey, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
For coming by. Anything you want to ask me, talk about?
So how's Vegas? I mean, you know, how's the Vegas scene?
The Vegas scene is, you know, like everywhere else, it has its layers, you know, and its different quirks. That Vegas is interesting because it draws such a cross-section of people, people who are not trained to be an audience. This might be their first time ever being an audience in their lives. And so in LA and in a lot of places where comedy clubs have proliferated for years and years, and on certain TV shows, The Tonight Show, the late night shows, people understand the rhythm of comedy, the rhythm of a Saturday Night Live. They know what to expect, or whether they think that landed or didn't. There's a certain kind of expectation. They don't have that in Vegas. In Vegas, they don't know what the hell is going on. They think they're part of the show, so other people think it's like a reverence kind of thing. We must be quiet. I mean, they have all different kinds of expectations. And there are all different levels, from the bars up to the, you know, mega theaters, the Sphere. And when I started back in the bars, in the, you know, open mics. And so I've played them all. And now I think I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable again being a headliner and pulling the headliner's weight. That to me takes years. How long did it take you?
Ooh, you know how we comics are. First of all, we think we headliners 2 weeks in. But I would say for me to get comfortable headline, I would say probably about 4 years.
Okay, what club did you start in DC?
Well, it was some more almost like little bars and stuff. It was a place in Suitland, Maryland called PJ's. It was actually a motel.
Okay.
And Chris Thomas and them would do that one. So it was like a little motel off to the side. It was horrible for comedy because it was a wall that wasn't, it was an open wall behind you. So you could hear the blenders and the people behind the wall. They talking because they didn't come for a comedy show. You hear their whole conversation because it's
Bar ain't
wide
part of
open.
the show.
A
Bar ain't
part
part
of
of
the
it.
show. So, and when you're brand new, everything throws you off.
Right.
So, yeah, so that was what I started at places like PJ's and Tacoma Station, and I was bombing everywhere I went because I didn't know you were supposed to prepare an act. So I would just jump up there and start talking because I thought that's what everybody else was doing. I never met another comedian.
Right.
So, so I took my bumps and bruises, and then I stopped altogether because I was like, "Ooh, I'm not good at this." But it wasn't that; it's just I wasn't prepared.
Right.
You know,
So
so.
who's in your comedy class? Give me names.
That came up around the same time as me. Well,
Right.
they kept going. So I'm gonna tell you who they were, but they kept going. So they're ahead of me. It was Dominique, Red Grant, Joe Claire, Donnell Rawlings.
Joe Claire's one of my other sons now. He's one of my I just worked with him at in Martha's Vineyard.
Donnell
Who else?
Rawlings, people like that. They kept going.
Well,
you
they're not
know.
ahead of you. Ain't nobody, this ain't no race. Everybody, people know who you are and what you do. And there are people who don't know who they are, even as successful. We
True.
have so many entertainment choices now that you can be famous and not have heard of your damn self. Because it's just so many different ways to do it. And I'm so happy you came by. My baby boy, my problem child, you know Skills, cousin.
Skills,
Yeah.
yes.
He's not feeling well, so he's not joining us
Oh,
tonight.
no.
But
Okay.
my oldest son, the one who looks just like me and who accompanied me and took me to see the Kamala Harris rally, vote for the inevitable. I came up with a slogan for Kamala. It's show some balls, vote Harris Walls.
I like that. We need it
You
as a
know?
bumper sticker.
I think so. I think it should be a yard sign. Anyway,
Oh, and have you
he.
seen any Vegas Aces games? You have
No, I
seen it?
haven't. No.
Okay. I got
I'm
to
gonna
get
have to,
there.
I told you, I don't like being in the audience. I don't like walking up and downstairs. I'm too damn old. You know, stairs are dangerous for old people. And so I think if you have more than one stair, you should put in an elevator because old people, just like you have handicapped stuff for people, you should have old people decap places. And we should have our own restroom where we can take our time. And we have stuff to clean up after ourselves. It's a whole different process once you get past 70. So
But they'll make it comfortable for you at the Aces Stadium. They got elevators, escalators, they have everything you need. We got to get you to a game next season because they
I
just
want
got
to.
eliminated.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna hold you to that. I also want to ask you one thing. Will you stick around? I know Stephen wants to say hello, and
Yes, I will.
then we will release you. Okay. Stephen, ladies and gentlemen, say hello to my oldest son, my producer son, my one. He produces my Book of Marcia show. And so he's also a stand-up comic. I met when he opened for Rainn Pryor. She was doing her fried chicken and latkes album. Anyway, we've come a long way together. He's been with me, and I'm so glad that he is my son. Say hello to Stephen Roberts. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Are you frozen?
I'm not frozen. I'm right here.
Hey,
Okay.
Steven.
Hi, Alicia. How are you?
Good. How are you? It's been too long.
It's been way too long. It's so good to see you. I have to tell you, I was listening and not looking. And I have to tell you, your voice is one of my favorite voices. You have such an incredible voice.
Well,
It's,
thank you.
I love listening to your voice. I can listen to your voice all night long because it's
Thank you, Steven.
Do you do voiceover
You
work?
know what? I only got to do it one time, and it was the best one time. I did Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse,
Oh,
okay. And
what
I did.
did
They
you
called
do?
it. They called it additional voices. So it was a crazy experience because you go in, and you guys have probably already done it, but you go in and you're behind an easel and you're in a soundproof room with the producer and the director, and they give you a bunch of pages. And then so they're like, read it like this. And you like, read it happy. And then you read the line. And they're like, now read it sad. You're reading the line. They're like, read it fast, read it slow. And then they snatch that page. And then the next page, then do it like this. And then you're like, I'm sweating. Like, can I get some water? Like, I made it, but it's a quick process and they direct you the whole time, and they're snatching pages from the easel, and but so then you don't know what they're going to use until you see the film.
That's
So
cool.
they used me on like three different characters on there, and the checks were really good because it was Sony, and then and it did really well. So I was like, okay, I like these little voiceover checks, and I ain't never get another job.
Oh, well, until this time.
Oh, I just love her voice, and I'm glad you asked that question because I wanted to know. And I've got another one. Tell me one of the Ten Commandments of comedy.
Well, the main one that we all know is thou shalt not steal or covet thy neighbor's jokes.
Okay, so you can covet, you just can't take it.
I
My,
don't
go
know. Don't covet either. I don't want to get that vibe from you. Do not covet my jokes. Just stay away.
ahead. Yeah. Or thou shalt not blame the audience. That's one.
That's a good one.
Yes, yes,
We talked to
yes.
Marsha all night about that one.
The number one rule of comedy is there are no rules of comedy.
Yes. So
Well,
yes,
honey.
I'm finishing this book, The Ten Commandments of Comedy. I want it ready before Christmas so people can pre-order it. So
I love it.
yeah. So it's coming together very well. I did the first draft, but you know,
Okay, well,
it's good.
you will be sending me a signed copy of
I
that.
will be sending you a signed copy. Yes, so I give the commandment, then I tell why, and I use personal anecdotes as to why I chose that
Wonderful.
particular chapter.
Oh,
How many
that's
books
great.
is this for
This
you?
is my first book.
It's your first book. Okay.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
thought you was gonna be telling me like you did 17 movies, two sitcoms, a partridge
No.
in a pear tree, and 42 books. So
No.
I expect the next time we talk, that you will have done at least that, if not more. And I
And
thank you
thank
for
y'all.
being with us and staying up and having some lemonade as I get drunk
Yes.
and stoned on my cannabis and cognac. And come back again anytime.
Thank y'all. Y'all have a good night.
Okay, you too, honey.
Bye, Alicia. Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is our family time. There, now that the hubbub and excitement of our guests has subsided, we get to talk amongst ourselves and share stories as a family. So, hi, son, what do
Hi,
you want to
Mom.
share with me?
Well, I learned that, and this actually surprises me, you like margaritas. I didn't know that.
I don't like margaritas. I don't like,
I didn't think you did. I was like, margaritas?
I mean, every once in a while, don't get me, I love Mexican food and I love to
Yes.
go to Mexican restaurants. And when I go to a nice Mexican restaurant, I like to have their signature margarita, just, for
Just
the,
to taste
but this day, we just kept drinking margaritas as we
it.
weren't really getting drunk. We like, are they putting booze in there? And of course, we were shit faced, but we didn't know that. And
It's
then
tequila.
when Kim came and she started drinking, it was like, and the people kept leaving, because it's getting later and later till it was just us. We had a private party. And that was fun. We ought to do that more often. I want to talk to the paper products people. We see you. You're not slick. That the rolls are getting smaller and smaller, and the price is getting higher and higher. And you think we don't understand that we have like 20% less paper for you. Toilet paper and paper towels. I love paper towels. I have a bit of a germophobic kind of thing where I have to wash my hands 40, 50,000 times a day. And using a cloth towel is nasty. So I like paper towels, but I going through them like crazy, and you're charging $30-$40 for 12 paper towels. It's time for y'all to stop. And that's another reason I'm voting for Kamala Harris. She's going to make them stop gouging us at these exorbitant prices for shit it don't cost you that much to make. Now, that's my 2-minute rant.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Well, then I would like to piggyback onto that rant and say, we don't need absurd toilet paper commercials with bears who talk about wiping their ass. We all know what they're for, and we don't need a cartoon bear to make it more palatable. It's about wiping your butt. And also, we don't need scalloped perforation on the toilet paper. You know, now they have, Charmin's got this thing. Now the perforation is scalloped instead of straight. Ooh. To give you a better, give us a better what? I think they actually said a better wipe. That doesn't do anything. You guys don't, there's no improving on the toilet paper. There, you don't, it's toilet paper. It's soft. Yes. And now wipe your ass. You know, I mean, what else do you, they are reaching now.
Well, how do you sell? Can you imagine you're an ad executive, you got a toilet paper account, you got to sell
toilet
paper.
Yes.
So what do you strategize? You're like, who
you say, you know what?
Paper? Well, bear shit in the woods. Let's do bear shitting in the woods. They don't have toilet paper, so we'll give some bears.
But they don't even do it clever. It's not even there. It's not even at least clever. Like if they had a real bear shit in the woods reference, a real one, that'd be hilarious. But they don't even make it funny.
And the thing is, you can't do that on TV because people are squeamish. I don't know. Cartoon, but that doesn't get me as much as the talking boogers. I just can't get with the talking boogers.
Are you talking about Mucinex?
Oh, gosh. They're just they're so disgusting.
It is gross. It's so disgusting. It's gross. You know what? Can I be honest with you? I really didn't clue in that he was a booger. I thought he was just like a snot man. Like, a booger is different than, like, he was just a gooey.
No, he's a green.
I thought he was phlegm, actually.
Well, the same where I don't care where it comes from.
Yeah, but now that you say he's a booger, now I'm really grossed out.
It's very gross. I was going to ask you and Skills a question. I think we have a conflict-driven society. And here in the Marshaverse, we don't want a conflict-driven society.
No.
We want collaboration, cooperation kind of
harmony
thing. And I was thinking about how we talk about intimacy and love and adult love, and I realized we don't talk about making love. We talk about having sex, and sex has its different connotations, and most often it's rather negative or perfunctory. It's not a celebratory thing. And I think we miss something really profound by not talking about what lovemaking is. And once you get my age, you don't have time for gym. You can't do gymnastic kind of quickies, you know, feel better. Yeah, it don't work. You have to invest in this experience. And so when you hear making love, what do you think?
So that's where we're going now. We're going from a rant about toilet paper to...
because toilet paper has a function in love.
It does.
But we don't have to really get into that.
Talk with my mom. Okay. All right. What is making love? I'll tell you that making love is by when I was a kid, you hear making love. It was usually a substitute for the F word around the children. So you kind of got an idea that making love meant sex. And then as I got older, as a matter of fact, when I was doing a play in college, it was The Grapes of Wrath. And the director, who was a great director, he was talking about these two people they were like at a I can't remember the scene, but everybody was gathering for like a picnic or something. He said, and you guys are make, he said to this couple of you guys are making love. And I was like, whoa. And he's like, you know, making love, like caressing and loving on each other and spending time and being close and intimate. That's making love. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. So I've kind of adopted that whole thing that making love is intimacy and demonstrative caring and romantic gestures, and it's more than just sex.
I think so too. And I think that in fact sex is a small part of it. I think, you know, you're at home and you're doing dishes, and as you walk by your partner's doing dishes, you just touch their face and maybe whisper something. I think you can make love 24/7.
Oh yeah,
and not have sex but once a week.
Are you trying to make an excuse here? Are you ramping up a case for only having to have sex once a week?
Are you Angie? Hell, once a week for at my age, give me the fucking gold star. I think if we not so much even emphasize it, but mentioned it, but talked about sex in loving terms, you don't have to put rules on it that you should be with this person and only in a committed relationship. But if the expectation is that kind of intimacy, that kind of sharing, that kind of communication, the eye to eye, they were thinking about calling them during the day, love making, those kind of things seem to me would work themselves out. You know, we'd have a different expectation of what intimacy is.
Well, you talk a lot about on this podcast and in your life, you talk a lot about how things have been established by the white straight male. And I would add to that, that, you know, our society is heteronormative. And so those of us who are queer in the LGBTQ community have different takes on what should be allowed sex-wise from the obvious sense, but also to the really non-traditional types of pairing or more, and how sex should be conducted and what kind of sex is okay and all of that kind of stuff. We really have diverted from the heteronormative rules. And so we have a whole different set of opportunities to explore what making love means and what partners you should have. And, you know, I mean, we weren't allowed to be married for centuries. So we came up with our own rules and said, okay, well, if I'm going to be, if I'm going to be what do you call it? I can't remember the word for it. But anyway, if I'm going to be somebody who doesn't go along with the norm, then I'm going to really not go along with the norm. Yeah. And I'm going to do what feels right. And we're kind of skating around this whole conversation about polyamory and open relationships and throuples and all of that, because we don't have the rest of the evening to talk about it. But that's really basically, can you be intimate with two other people at the same time?
Sure.
Sure, of course you can.
But I think that when we talk about these things, like I said, we talk about, and people want little definite rules. What do you do? What do you do? It's not what you do. It's your thought process behind it. You know, it's not just, oh, bring her flowers or bring right. him or whatever. It's whoever comes in the house and says, I know you've been working. I brought dinner. I thought about you. I care about you. I want to make things easy and better for you. And communicating that in everything you do as a partner is lovemaking. It's how you make love happen.
Right.
And then not
make love
just
happen.
Your
great way
partner,
to say it.
But everybody. Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, I see you look kind of sad. Is there something I can bring you or something I can do for you? That is, it's showing care and affection and leading with your heart which is the hardest thing in this society to do. We don't reward that, but we could.
Yeah. Make love happen is a great way to finish that phrase. You know, so I've been with my husband for 20 years. We've been married for 8, but we've been together for 20, 21 coming up here. And he just said, like 2 or 3, 3 or 4 weeks ago, he said the most important thing he's ever said. And somebody said, you know, why is Stephen so important to you? And he said, because he sees me. I mean, I had nothing to say to that except to just take it in.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess I knew that, but I really didn't know that. And him seeing me, seeing him yeah. was to hear that. I honestly, that's all I need. I mean, fulfilled really and truly. That he gets that from me means that I've done my job and okay. that I made love happen for him truly, you know?
And on the other foot, how does he do that for you?
Well, I'll tell you, he does see me, but if I were going to say the ultimate thing, he is game for anything. He's on my side no matter what. That's huge. I don't find very many people like that. I mean, and that's really what makes a family too, right? Somebody who's on your side no matter what.
Well, that's what it is for you. It seems to me that you both have different needs and abilities that complement each other. And,
sure.
And, you know, we think we want to be loved the way we think we
right.
want to be loved. But sometimes we really need to be loved the way they love us.
Right.
And we need to let them love us, and they need to let us love them.
Or we're saying the same thing two different ways.
Yeah.
You know, no, that
I'm there
could be
for
it.
You. I care yeah. for you. I want the best for you. I want to do stuff with you, to you, for you.
Yeah.
Around.
Somebody was just talking about do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And somebody said, how about do unto others the way they want to be done to? How about that? And I thought, ooh, that's a good one.
Was I supposed to talk about something else?
Do you want to, while you're checking your notes, should we remind the audience that if they like what they saw, they should definitely comment, subscribe, and say hi to us and let us know if they'd like us to talk about anything particular on your show?
I think I just asked them to, if you have something to contribute about what is love, how to love outside of the bedroom, how do you feel comfortable showing love to people you're not in love with? And just your ideas about how we can be and start to celebrate more loving, especially, I think, with our male population that we've taught to be quiet and reserved and not show affection and all of that. And as a woman who watches and observes women, I can tell you that there's nothing that most women find more attractive than a man, a masculine man, talking to a child or bringing home a puppy or
masculine man teaching kindergarten.
Yeah, showing some, you know, playing with his baby or, you know, allowing himself to be vulnerable, which is really what it takes to be loved. And those kind of things, you know, we talk about, well, she wants him to do the dishes. She wants him to do the dishes to show that he's thinking about her and what it takes to be her. Not because she needs him to wash the dishes.
Right.
And so any thoughts you might have about what's lovemaking and what's sexy and what the difference is, you want to tell us, let's talk about it. Anything we've had on this show today, let's talk about it. Anything you want to ask us, anything you want to tell us, any booze drink you want to suggest, your favorite strain, you want to leave that here. You know, let's talk
send
about
it off, or we're not turning it down.
Yeah. And like I said, accept talking like mama now, accept your greatness and your uniqueness and just, yeah. And we got this. We really got this. We have this opportunity. You know, vote Harris Walz. And I'm telling you, we got this. See this finna? And the thumb. See the fin. You better run. Hey, you better run and go on to bed and get some rest and come back and see us next week. Where are you going to be this week?
This week I'll be at Puppetry of the Penis at the Erotic Heritage Museum in Las Vegas. Come and watch me host the show, and then two guys will make figurines out of their penises and balls.
Okay, that's balloon animals. Yeah,
but I don't do it. I just go. I keep my clothes on.
No, but I just trying to think. You know, a strip show is one thing, but making a duck out of your cock is just a whole other kind of.
That's actually funny the way you said that. Make a duck out of your cock.
Okay. And then put it on the wall like a shadow. Get out of here.
It's a fun show.
Before they come and arrest us. I'll be here next week with Skills and Steven and you and a special guest that we're going to keep a secret for now. Thank you for joining us.
Skills.
We love you. What? This is Skills?
I said, we miss you, Skills.
Yes, we do miss. I thought you were going, this is Skills.
This is Skills.
Right now.
Ma. Ma.
Ma. Ma.
or what? What?
Steven. Ball. Ball. Okay. Anyway, thank you for watching.
One more thing. Do you want to talk about a museum?
I don't really have a museum. That's another thing. One thing we can talk about. I don't know if you've been watching this show, you know that Black History Museums is visiting them is my bucket list. I want to visit every Black History Museum I can. And then any museum that is related archaeologically or artistically or in any way to Black history, I want to visit. And so, I want to know of associations of history museums that maybe I can find the information from, or any networking of museums, or any history museum in your area that you want me to be aware of. Please drop a line and let me know. And go visit. Take your kids. Everybody. Not just Black people. This is American history. So I promise you, it's cathartic. You know, there's pain and stuff that you want to be scared of. And sometimes it's all whitewashed and all of it. It doesn't matter. The more we go, the quicker we get past. And so thank you, Stephen, for mentioning. And let me know your favorite Black history museum. Again. Thank you for watching. Come back again next week. Love you. Bye-bye. Marsha. You know what I got. Marsha.
She got away. No one can do it like that. Her own style. No one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back. She's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back.